Welcome, all able-bodied listeners, to Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood, the podcast supplement that tastes exactly as it smells. I'm Kevin from the Court of Nerds, and I'll be taking you through the news and reviews of geekdom that took place this past week, ending with a spin of fade as I talk about topics of Point Dexter pointedness. Before we get to all that, a word from this week's sponsor, English Leather Cologne.
I think women are becoming a little more frightening to men these days.
And things haven't gotten any better.
Maybe because we're freer to do much more.
Also known as insecurity.
But some men aren't intimidated at all. They enjoy our freedom.
Damn right.
Those are the men I like. And you know, those are the men who wear English leather cologne.
You had me up to that point.
English leather fits the way they live. It's so clean and natural.
Clean and natural like a chemical bath.
And I love it. So all my men wear English leather, or they wear nothing at all.
So let me get these options straight. So me and all the other men you're banging have to wear the same cologne, or we can't wear any clothes.
Look for English leather in a wide selection of gift sets.
That's English leather cologne. Congratulations, you're now a nudist. And now, the news! In I Keep Telling You It Was Coming Back news, Games Workshop has just announced that they will be releasing the new Necromunda at Forge World's Open Day in Nottingham. It will be coming out this fall, and I am super excited. The figures of Necromunda haven't been produced since 2012, and I've missed them. Now, instead of large hunks of pewter, they will be all plastic molds with design options. Hell, I'll just read to you the press release. Quote, it's been more than a decade since we last visited the Underhive, but very soon you'll be able to battle it out in the depths of Hive Primus. If you are new to the hobby, you'll not be familiar with Necromunda, or perhaps you've only heard about it from fond memories of other hobbyists. Necromunda dives into the underworld of the Imperium, allowing players to control their own Hive gang, a pack of ruthless criminal killers augmented with black market cybernetics, gene modifications, and scavenged weaponry. Where Warhammer 40,000 puts you in the hands of an army, in Necromunda, the scale is much smaller, but the action is just as intense. Every single ganger counts. In between intense skirmish battles, your gang will grow from a pack of battle-hungry juves to the feared and respected syndicate of hardened veterans. To get there, however, you'll have to battle against your fellow players, each with a gang of their own. Man, I am so excited about this. Necromunda is being launched with two classic factions and a box set this fall, Escher and Goliath. Gangs from House Escher are fast, deadly, and cruel. While lightly armored, these cunning warrior women hold their own in melee combat. While at range, they are notorious for their use of armor-melting plasma weaponry. The gangers of House Goliath are a living testament to brawn over brains. Every member of House Goliath is a slab of vat-grown muscle, armed and armored with repurposed industrial gear. GW will continue to support Necromunda for the foreseeable future, but if you like these niche of a niche skirmish games, then you have to do something that every gamer hates. Spend money on it. Jeez, sometimes I feel like a broken record when I say that.
I love the Danger Code Deadly Equipment Warehouse. Look at this multi-pack of ion diffusers. I only need one, but it's such a bargain.
All right, I just need to see your credentials. You know you need a doctorate in evil science to shop here.
Yeah, last time I kind of sweet-talked the guy. And by sweet-talked, I mean threatened his family.
I know, it was me. But since then, I've gotten divorced, so your threats are meaningless. You're looking at a man with nothing left to lose.
All right, fine. Orbot, print out my transcript.
According to this, you're 2 credits short of the graduation requirement. You're not a doctor.
You know, for a guy with nothing left to lose, you sure care a lot about the ins and outs of academic bureaucracy. Let's go, knuckleheads. This other knucklehead doesn't want our business.
In I'm in love with Sonic all over again reviews, Sonic Mania is finally released, and while I haven't finished it yet, I'm completely in love with it. Cards on the table. I was a Sega guy. During the early 90s, you fell into 2 camps, Nintendo or Sega. I landed on the blistering blue hedgehog side of the equation while most, if not all of my friends, landed on the Nintendo side. What can I say? I was too cool. Or their parents thought fat plumbers were preferable to kids playing Mortal Kombat with cartoonish amounts of blood and gore. Anywho, Sonic has had a well-documented hard time getting a good game out over the past decade and a half. There was a period of time where Sega thought that having complex emo characters and anime-contrived storytelling was a good direction to go. While it sold okay in Japan, games like Sonic and the Black Knight just didn't land well in America and Europe. Several attempts at recapturing the essence have been made, like Generations, which included all the reinventions of Sonic you could ever imagine, including the Sonic Boom, Sonic with the Hipster Scarf. I actually really like Sonic Boom the series, it's hilarious. What makes Sonic Mania so good is that it scraps all the things that have globbed onto Sonic the Hedgehog over the years and just gives you blistering gameplay. The story is minimal. The dastardly Dr. Robotnik is once again in search of the powerful Chaos Emeralds in order to power a new Doomsday device. Sonic and his friends Knuckles and Tails seek to stymie the villainous plot of the Emerald's energy displaces them in time, sending him through reshuffled versions of levels from previous games as well as new locations. Benefiting from the game's pedigree, Sonic Mania often feels like a devious ROM hack using elements from older games to create its worlds. Much of Sonic Mania's success is owed to the many fans-turned-designers attached to the product. In seeking to produce the best retro mix possible, Sega recruited well-known modders and hackers. Christian Whitehead, known for porting Sonic games like Sonic CD, which I still play to this day, to new platforms, and Simon Tomley, a modder who worked on the topsy-turvy ROM hack of Sonic Mega Mix, worked on the project, and their enthusiasm is clear. Level designer Jared Castle's work is arguably the most noteworthy. There is extreme care built into every loop, every spring pad, and every corkscrew. Now, I hear that the game is short, but that's so for most Sonic games. They are made to be replayed. Hell, I could beat Sonic 2 in less than a half an hour without losing a life, which made passing the controller after the death rule something my friends hated to agree on. But it's only $20. $20! You'll spend more on beer this week than you will on this game. Wait, not everyone is me. But I feel the analogy holds true for a lot of you.
The rec center's closing forever?
The funding was pulled because the city needs another houseboat.
You can't close the rec center. What about the disenfranchised youth?
Yeah, where will they enfranchise themselves?
You win some, you lose some.
This week I'm scrapping the Wheel of Insanity because I have a topic that I feel needs to be addressed. This year has been demoralizing for several reasons, but what pisses me off the most is how we are seeing a resurgence of things we thought we had left behind as a society a long time ago, and I need to vent a little in a scathing nerdist kind of way. So if you're playing this in open air or have kids around, I'm going to say some angry cussy things. Turn it down or put headphones on. Or don't, maybe somebody else needs to hear this. Ready? Okay. What the ever-living fuck is wrong with people? It's a damn rhetorical question, because we know what is wrong. We just don't like to admit things like racism, misogyny, and fascism are alive and well in the hearts of a significant portion of the populace. The basket of deplorables is not only real, it has been on the forefront of our news coverage and on full display for the world. The world to see! It's goddamn embarrassing. It seems every week we have a new asshole to be pissed at. From farmer bro Martin Shkreli to women aren't suited to be engineers James Damore. Wait, you know what? Fuck this guy. You know nothing, cuck. You claim to advocate meritocracy, but clearly your own ideas can't stand up to, quote, Google's ideological echo chamber, end quote. Oh, other people agree with you too? Fuck them too! You cherry fucking pick all the evidence from outdated studies on gender and sex in order to promote your own misogynistic beliefs and then paint yourself like some kind of victim who pulls in six figures typing for a living. You're not staying in a fucking gulag, you fucking piece of human refuse. You're just angry because no self-respecting woman would touch you unless you paid them. Calm, Sledge. Calm. I didn't really mean to go off on this one thing in particular, but now that I'm here, fuck it. Let's bury this cockless douche nozzle. He went off on how diversity is harming the industry. But what he is really saying is that he thinks people with opposing viewpoints from him are making things not as good as it would be if more people were like him. Women and people of color aren't the problem if they agree with him, but they quote generally end quote don't. I was fed a lot of this same bullshit growing up too. Multiculturalism is bad. Secularism is bad. It's ruining America. What those who taught me that were really saying is, our spot on the social totem pole is getting lowered, so we need to vilify the other because our own ideas can't stand up to their arguments, and we know it. Let me start out by saying that I think Google did the right thing by firing James Damore for promoting harmful gender stereotypes. His memo worked as a dog whistle to all those who oppose promoting more women in female tech. It's toxic to the work environment, and he needed to go. That said, is there ever a right moment to discuss biological differences between genders? I don't think anyone would deny there is a physical difference. There are hormonal differences, and we're fairly comfortable to make the distinction in sports so that both women and men can play at the world top, setting aside the differences in pay and media coverage for the moment, which is unfortunately huge. I wonder, is there any context in which the subjective examination of differences is acceptable? Noting that this memo was definitely not in the right context. As a left progressive myself, I have a strong aversion to promoting gender stereotypes, but I'm also interested in defending objective research. We often blame the right for denying science when it comes to climate change and even evolution, but when the science clashes with our belief systems, do we suppress that science as well? No, we don't. But here's the bullshit of these claims that he built into his argument. Women used to be much more involved in STEM, as we call it, before the 1980s. Then, as a proportion of the male college attendees, it dropped. But it's not because women stopped entering into the fields like computer science. The expanding educational system and expectation that all kids would go to college changed the landscape. The American South had actually been connected to the electric grid by this point, and a large portion of the population that never dreamed of college ended up going. Upward mobility is still easier for a man in our society than, and that explains why the growth of men into a field, while women's growth was slower. But that it's picking up now. I could go on, well, perhaps I should, but Damore, of course, then seeks out affirmation for his views after he got fired from not respected scientists, not from professors, not from sociologists, but from alternative right YouTube personalities. The separate interviews were conducted by Jordan B. Peterson and Stefan Molyneux, both controversial alt-right commentators. Peterson is a Canadian clinical psychologist whose controversial views about white privilege and identity politics have made him an alt-right celebrity. Molyneux, who is also Canadian, has garnered more than 600,000 subscribers to his YouTube channel for videos that are titled Why Feminists Hate Men and In Trump We Trust. A brief look at the people who follow Peterson and Molyneux will unveil people who espouse white supremacy and even Nazi ideals. When my father was alive, we didn't often agree. Hell, we found ways to argue about everything, which I think we both enjoyed doing. But I always did listen. My dad had lots of folksy wisdom to impart. One thing he said to me was, "You're judged by the company you keep." I have, of course, responded that Jesus must have been judged as a prostitute and a fisherman, and I thought I had done his argument with some bit of biting wit. "So you're comparing yourself to Jesus?" I paused, knowing the trap I was about to walk into, weighed my options and said, "No." If you are called out on your beliefs, and the people that give you support are misogynists and Nazis, I will judge you for the company you keep. Asshole.
Suddenly you're worried about your baby's safety? I guess we could watch your kid for a little while. After all, we save the village on a weekly basis. How hard could it be to watch one baby?
Why would she trust us with a baby? We dropped a tree on her!
There's gotta be something we can do to make it stop! Baby's hungry!
Yeah, let's, feed it a chili dog. Everyone loves chili dogs.
I don't think he can eat solid food.
Well, then put it in the blender.
Well, if you say so.
The chili dog, not the baby!
Oh, okay, that makes more sense.
Thanks for stopping by, Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood. Make sure you read our reviews of Tom King's Mr. Miracle and Scott Snyder's Metal. Both books you should pick up this week if you haven't already. I'm Kevin from The Court of Nerd saying, some things are better left unsaid, is what I think just before I say them. Bye!